Hi, this is Matt Merton, and you're listening to Hanshin Tigers English News.
You're listening to H10, Hanshin Tigers English News, where your passion for the first place Hanshin Tigers knows no limits. Today is Wednesday, June the 2nd, and this is episode 129. I am your host, T-Ray, here in Nishinomiya, Japan. And with me in Honolulu is Sanjay.
Aloha, brother T-Ray. How's it?
It's going good. It's always going good when you're following the Tigers, especially so far in 2021. Also with us in Canada, the Toronto Maple Leafs fan who can no longer be a fan for several months, Gabe.
This franchise is cursed, man. Bad enough I cheer for the Tigers and their constant foibles, but now my hockey team's in the tank too?
Go Jets, go! Go Jets, go!
Okay, tell me sorry, you're we are not this part out, right?
No. This stays in. Come on, it is hockey playoff time, and that is almost as... Well, it is more exciting for me than the Tigers, sorry to say. But we do have a great show for you because we are going to preview the second half of Interleague. And it is going to be a fun second half, I believe. So strap in and join us for a great ride. It's time for the Rumors and News.
Rumors and News. Rumors and News.
Well, let's get started with talking about our imports and particularly those who are down on the farm. So I believe for the entirety of this two-week stretch, we've had the same three guys down there. Those being Joe Gunkel, Wei Yin Chen, and John Edwards. From what I can see, Gunkel threw on May the 30th against the Giants. That was at Koshien in a farm game. Threw 4 1/3, gave up 3 hits, no walks, and struck out 2. And he is looking to be our starter this coming Sunday against the SoftBank Hawks, if all goes well, health-wise. So good to hear some good news about him. We're going to see some import shuffling if he's coming up. That means somebody's got to go down, whether it be Alcantara or Rojas Jr. It's probably going to be one of those two. Where in the world is Wei Yin Chen? I don't know. He has not done anything on the farm since he was sent down, and that was quite a while ago already, almost a month ago now. So I'm not really sure what his story is, but I don't think he started in any games, and I also never heard anything about any injuries. The media, who seem to follow everybody around no matter where they go and can tell us how many times they slurped how many bowls of ramen, aren't telling us a thing about Wei Yin Chen here, so I'm sorry everybody, I've got nothing to report on him. However, John Edwards had a clean 2 weeks. As far as I could see, he pitched 3 innings total during the two-week stretch. We didn't have a ton of games. He also threw 1 inning in that same game as Gunkel threw against the Giants. 1 clean inning, 2 strikeouts. So he's got the 3 clean innings in these 2 weeks, and I think he's just biding his time for either injury or just the need for our bullpen to be beefed up. And guys, do we need a little beefing in our bullpen? I would say so too. And so it'll be interesting to see what they do if they do bring in Edwards for that role or if they give that to Gunkel or what. Okay, another one of our favorites in the rumors and news. And speaking of where in the world is, Shintaro Fujinami, the traveling man, who seems to make trips up and down from the farm to the main squad, a regular part of his daily or weekly routine. It has been down on the farm for a while now, and threw in a couple of games during our two-week time off here. On the 22nd of May against the Dragons, he only threw 3 innings, gave up 3 hits, 3 runs, partly because of 6 walks and 2 wild pitches. So not a good outing for him. Then he came back on the 29th of May against the Giants and threw 5 innings, 1 hit, 2 walks, no runs, and 5 strikeouts. Looked like his good self. And I heard that he tinkered with his windup. I could probably say that every episode and it wouldn't be, like fake news. He tinkered with his windup and I think he's doing things a little bit better, and I'm not sure exactly what it is. So sorry, you'll just have to use your imaginations on that, everybody.
Yeah, it's getting hard to keep track of whether or not he's Mr. Jekyll or Dr. Hyde at this point. You don't know what you're going to get anytime Fujinami steps onto the mound.
For sure.
Come on, he's just a work in progress still.
Well, yeah, as long as he's making progress, he's not a work in regress or anything like that. That's what we're looking for. We want him to keep moving forward. He is also 26, 27. He's getting up there. Not that, you know, he's past his prime or anything, but he should be entering the best years of his life as a pro. And hopefully he'll be able to do that real soon, because we've been waiting a long time to get our good Shinshan back. Speaking of waiting to get guys back, and speaking of not having a single clue about what some of these guys are doing, Haruto Takahashi hurt his oblique muscles in February, has not thrown from a mound since. We're talking almost 4 months of inactivity. And I don't know like how serious these injuries are or what his story is. And clearly he's got better medical care than I do or most of us do, but what gives? And how come there's no reports? That's just kind of a little bit of a mystery there as well. Kento Itohara went down during this 2 week stretch, I believe, or maybe it was just before we left last time. Lower body injury, I think it was last time. But anyways, we haven't heard anything from him either. So he hasn't played on the farm or anything either. So it could be a good stretch of time before we get him back. I'm guessing at least end of June. And then another guy went down with an injury of sorts, I guess. Yasuhiro Yamamoto, who came over from the Giants and has been kind of spelling Kinami slash Itohara in the middle of the infield, and even played a bit of third when Oyama moved over to first. He has got the appendicitis, and so he'll be out for a while as well. No word on when he'll return, but he's not a super crucial piece of the puzzle, but still, given the two errors that our middle infielders made last night, I don't mind if he's ready to come back soon. So that'll do it. Before we get into the recap, let's send some shout-outs to our patrons. So Tokyo Swallows has been a faithful supporter of ours, and we are going to be talking about the last game of our series against them at the start of the recaps, and so we'll thank you also for that, Tokyo Swallows. Anita, just down the road from me, is a faithful sponsor, as is Zorni, our graphic designer, and the guy who's coming on the Koshien tour when Koshien opens up, pardon me, when Japan opens up to foreign visitors. Ian Hadel is on the digital platform, and he is also thanked for his support and patronage. And also Paolo in Kobe, a good friend of mine, thank you for your patronage. This show is for you and because of you. So thanks, all of you. So we were supposed to have 5 games of Central League action before we jumped into Interleague as far as this recap goes. Turns out it's only one. And that would be on May the 19th against the Yakult Swallows with Junya Nishi on the mound for his first career start. I don't know if you guys caught this one, but all of the headlines, and this includes even an English article written by, I think, Kyodo News, wrote about him, which was pretty amazing. His first inning was pretty shaky. He looked really nervous, walked a couple, I think the first two guys that he faced, settled in, walked 4 total over 5 innings, struck out just 1, and the article said it was a questionable strike 3. Don't even talk to me about questionable strike 3s anymore, because we saw plenty of those against our bats, and we'll talk about that later. Anyhow, he got the 1 strikeout, no hits in those 5 innings. So he had a no-hitter going, the team had a no-hitter going, and we'll talk about that in a second. But first, how did we get some runs on the board? Chikamoto hit a home run in the bottom of the 5th, which gave Junya the first career win right there. Otherwise, he would have had a no decision. Yamamoto and Chikamoto singles combined with a stolen base and an error to their catcher in the bottom of the 7th got us 1 run. And then Yakult in the top of the 8th broke the no-hitter with 2 outs. So there were just 4 outs left in this no-hitter. They got 3 straight singles to score them a run. And then Sands came up in the bottom of the 8th and slugged one out of the park. 3-1 lead for us. And Suarez slammed the door shut for his 13th save. So a 3-1 win. Thank you again, Tokyo Yakult Swallows, as I said earlier. Appreciate it.
That was a fun game to watch, huh?
It was. It really was. Seeing Junya out on the mound and then the home run in perfect timing from Chikamoto to get him the win. And they were both on the Heroes podium as well, which was kind of cool. And then Sands with the perfectly timed home run. He does it, man. He does it late in games when we need that extra run or when we need to break a tie. He is the man.
Mr. Clutch.
The stick that stirs the drink. Yeah.
Absolutely. Love it. Well, we're going to talk about players of the month, and he might get a mention in there as well. We will see. Anyhow, let's continue in the recaps, or the lack thereof, for the rest of the week, because Ameyagi, that would be Koyo Aoyagi, the 11th time in his career now, he's had a game rained out that he was scheduled to start. And so we didn't finish that series against the Swallows. And then thanks to COVID, the COVID Carps canceled the entire three-game series with us. It was not only Kikuchi and Kozono and a couple other guys, but they had a second wave, even a third wave of positive tests. And so they actually also postponed the first two games of their interleague. So they missed five straight games in there. Well, anyways, we completely missed that series, which means that we came into interleague well-rested, and we should be ready to take on the PL. Yes? In for a rude awakening, because all the talk of the PL being strong, it's true. There's truth to it. Okay, so cut to the chase, T-Ray. We dropped game one, 5-3. Nishi with an error in the top of the first to give them a run. Marte and Sands with home runs in the bottom of the third to give us a 3-1 lead. Looked good until the top of the seventh. Nishi still in the game, and Toritani, the pinch hitter, comes up. The fans going crazy for, you know, the hero of yesteryear. Gets them an RBI single, and it's 3-2, and everybody's going crazy. Yeah, Toritani, good for you. Except for that was the start of their rally, because then Iwasaki got pounded by Martin, who hit a two-run home run, and then Iwasada gave up an RBI double to Brandon Laird, and so 5-3 loss for us. Iwasaki takes that loss, and you know, ever since the towel went on sale, his famous zero ten de osaeru koto ga dekite yokatta desu, or whatever, like, I'm glad I was able to put up a zero. He hasn't put up many zeros, which is really unfortunate. Not sure if it's fatigue or something else, but anyhow.
I was going to say, do you think it might be a bit of overuse? I mean, like, the yeah. Advantage of having, you know, Iwasaki and Suarez in the back end of the bullpen is that games do last seven innings. The problem is, if you overuse them, then you do have to play the eighth and the ninth. And, I mean, it's also just, Leonis Martin is just way too good this season. He's in the running for PL MVP, yeah, in my opinion. And you can't pitch to him. You gotta work around him.
No, and he showed that later in the series as well. So certainly, like, he is a force to be reckoned with. And maybe we should be thankful that we only have to face them three times a year. Well, we won the next game, which is nice. We beat them 3-2. All of the runs were produced by our number 8, number 9, and number 1 and number 2 hitters. So it was kind of interesting. Obata with a walk and a hit. Akiyama with 2 sack bunts. Chikamoto with an RBI double plus a single. And Nakano with a sack fly. That was the totality of our 3 runs. Akiyama was mostly perfect through 7. He gave up 1 single that could have been, if judged properly by our left fielder, would have been an out. So it could have been no hitting them through 7. They scored a run in the 8th, and then Suarez gave up an unearned run in the 9th because of an Egoshi error. So we win 3-2. It was a little bit too close for my liking, but it really was a Hanshin game until the end when it got really tight. But again, this is looking at our bullpen saying, as Gabe just said, maybe the guys that we're counting on, we've been leaning on so hard that fatigue is starting to be a factor. Maybe it's that the PL really do have good hitters, and that is definitely true of the Marines. They are a very good hitting team. There's other factors as well. Anyhow, we go into the rubber match here on Thursday, and Alcantara is on the mound. Very first pitch. I've got it on Sun TV, and I don't know if you guys know Sun TV, but they've got like this theme music that'll just get stuck in your head. And they play it through the first pitch of the game because the broadcast starts at 6 and first pitch is at 6. And while their theme music is playing, Ogino hits a home run into the left field stands, the very first pitch of the game, during the sweet-sounding song that's supposed to get me excited about the game. The good news is that Alcantara then recorded 12 straight outs, so through 4 innings, that was all they got. And after 5 innings, the Tigers were up 4-2, thanks to Sato, Alcantara, Sands, and Sands RBIs. Those are 4 separate occasions, so it wasn't like multi-RBIs on the Sands hit. But then the Marines scored 3 in the top of the 6th. I really felt like that one run, or I guess 2 runs, there was a double that, again, I really feel like maybe if our left fielder had a bit more UZR, he would have been able to catch it. But anyhow, they also scored in the top of the 8th, and Alcantara was hung with the loss. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Baba came in and He gave up a single a home run to Martin in this one as well. So we go 1-2 against the Marines, which is kind of disappointing. I think we had predicted 2-1, or most.
I predicted 1-1-1, so I was a tie. There you go.
Okay. So you were pretty close, yeah. And then we went up against the Lions, and we had predicted, I think me and Sanjay had predicted 1-1-1, and you predicted 2-1.
Call me Nostradamus.
So you nailed this one. Yeah, there you go. So, Friday night, Sato, Sato, Sato. Oh my goodness. We win 10-7, and it was all, I shouldn't say it's all because of Sato, because there was a lot of other runs scored, but Sato hit 3 home runs. And we can list off a ton of trivia about that, and we probably will, right, Sanjay?
Okay.
Anyhow, so Sato hit a home run to get us the first run, and then Nakano got an RBI. Game is tied. After that, they tied it up. Then Sans and Sato hit home runs to put us up 4-2. They tied it. Oyama got an RBI single. Then the Lions tied it and took the lead, so it's 7-5. And my boy Zorni, who we mentioned in the shoutouts, we were texting back and forth, and he goes, "Man, I'm going for a nap. This sucks. Like, we keep, every time we get a lead, we lose it." And, you know, he went for his nap, and I texted him after we got a couple runs in the top of the ninth, because I forgot the first one, but the second one was an Oyama RBI single, I believe. So we tied the game at 7. Sato was up with 2 outs. This was after a Sans out. And so I texted Zorni before the Sato home run. I said, "Hey man, you might want to wake up if you can, because the game is tied and it's not over yet." And Sato crushed this home run, 3-run home run. And then Suarez strikes out the side to give us the big 10-7, super exciting win. This was easily the game of the month, if not game of the year so far for me, just in terms of pure excitement. Yukiya Saito gets his first career win, and Sato makes history, quite literally. So Sato making history with those 3 home runs, he becomes the first rookie in Central League history since 1958, Mr. himself. That would be Shigeo Nagashima, who did it against the Taiyo Whales. So the first guy in 63 years to do that. He's the 4th in history to do that as a rookie. He hit 1 to each of the field, so 1 to left, 1 to center, and 1 to right. I think that's the first time ever for a rookie to do that in a game. What else can we say about
this? The 1 to right needed air traffic clearance. That thing almost left the MetLife Dome. And I know that place has a reputation for being a launching pad. Sato made the most of it.
Yeah, that was like simply unbelievable. Absolutely, yeah, I can totally agree with you there. Okay, the other one...
You saw him strike that pose after he hit that third one, where he had like 2 fingers pointed up in the air, like, "What else can I do?" You know, and yeah. That's going to be an iconic shot.
Absolutely, yeah, it's classic. And there was a great video taken by a fan as well that I retweeted. I don't know if you guys saw that, but it was really quite amazing. Just seeing all the fans going nuts, but he or she recorded Sato, so we didn't get to see the path of the ball. We just got to see Sato from the time that he swung the bat all the way through to the time that he came around to the dugout after rounding the bases. Really special video. So a special, special game for us to start that series. The second one, guys. Okay, I'm going to start to get a little bit cranky and crusty for the rest of the recaps, because I really think the umps screwed us in this game. Imai was getting every strike call that he didn't deserve. And Ito really hung in quite well. I mean, he didn't pitch his best game by any means. I think he was kind of lucky to get out allowing just the one run, which was a solo shot to Yamakawa. But he kind of did the same thing as he did against Smoke, where he got Yamakawa down 0-2 and then just danced around him to a full count. And then when he had no other choice but to throw a strike, he did. And Yamakawa made him pay. You can't do that against these home run hitters, whether they're Central League or Pacific League or Gaijin or Japanese. You can't do it. And that cost us. I really think, though, that we could have and should have scored runs in this one. I believe there was also a bunt that I didn't care for. I don't remember the details, and I try not to remember the details, but yeah. Kind of disappointing after the huge win to come down to lose 0-1. And I don't know what happened in that game either, because we got a total of 17 runs on Friday, just the one run on Saturday, and then back to 17 runs on Sunday. Like, was it just really good pitchers or really tired batters, or I don't know, the food they ate? I'm not really sure. Anyhow, we win on Sunday 9-8. So Ito hits a home run to start this one, 2-0. Then Ito for them hits a three-run home run off of our rookie, Shoki Murakami, making his debut. Marte with an RBI that caused, that was also helped with an error, I believe, by their center fielder, which also injured him. I think he like tore his ACL. Poor guy. So then we went down 5-3. Murakami was gone after that. We tied it up with Chikamoto and Nakano, and then we got the lead through Umeno home run, his first of the season. Itoi hit a sac fly to extend it, and then Umeno with an RBI triple. So we are up, I think, 9-5, but then Iwasada gave up three runs, and then Iwazaki was really shaky to get a zero up there. And then Suarez, I wouldn't say was shaky, but certainly I think they got two guys on base, and so they had plenty of chances to flip this one, either a walk-off or just a come-from-behind victory. But we pull it off 9-8, take the series 2-1, and are 3-3 in Interleague through the first week. The Central League, finally, for the first time in ages, holding their own against the Pacific. We won't get into the details, but good for the CL. I don't think this is going to shut up the critics, and I don't think that they should shut up, but it is good to, it is good to see the Central actually punching back a little bit.
One quick question about that Itoi home run from the May 30th game. When he went to the dugout camera and he was mimicking Teruaki Sato's finger swiping, was he actually writing his own name in kanji, or was he just doing a scribble?
Well, I mean, it's kind of hard to say, but I think it could have been his autograph, like how he does his autograph, right? Because it looked like it was scribbly, but I think, I mean, knowing Itoi, I don't think he would do something that serious. I think it was probably just him, you know, kind of trolling his buddy, his kohai from Kindai University.
He even did that fingers pointing upward pose as well.
There you go.
Right after he hit that home run.
Hey, and speaking of trolling, I don't know if you guys know, but Umeno's got a pose for his home runs as well, which he finally got to do. And he made this up, I think, in the off season because he switched to number two. It's called the U2 pose. And I'll show it to you guys so you can see it, but it looks like this. So it's like the shape of a U with two thumbs up. So it's like two up. And I think like Akiyama went on Twitter or Instagram and posted a picture of himself doing it before Umeno had a chance to do it post game. So it's kind of like, I'm beating you to it, boy. And so he got that up on social media. So good on Akiyama for having a little bit of fun.
This is why you don't tell your friends any secrets when there's social media around.
Well, I'm hoping that Akiyama is going to be able to help us even out this series against the Buffaloes, because the bad news is we started last night against the Buffaloes at home with a loss. Yuki Nishi, as Sanjay reported to us on the H10 Facebook, looking for his first career win in the regular season against the Buffaloes, which would give him wins against all 12 NPB teams. Wasn't able to do it, in part because the Buffaloes scored two, and we also scored two when he was done in the seventh inning. In part because in the bottom of the seventh, we had a great chance and weren't able to come through on it. And then also in part because in the eighth inning, we had another implosion. Iwazaki not doing so well, and they scored a total of three runs. The last two of those were a pretty lucky hit, but nevertheless, I mean, they did have guys on base in order to make that happen. So a 5-2 loss. Our guys looked pretty lifeless in much of this game. And I got to say this, like props to Taisuke Yamaoka for an excellent game. I mean, he just looked so good pitching. I don't know if you guys watched. I watched fairly closely and I didn't see very many hittable pitches. He was painting those corners and extending the corners out. And if you look on social media, you'll see like Tigers fans were griping to no end about the umping because there were several key calls. Particularly on Marte, who could have had a walk that turned into a strikeout. It was clearly a ball. It was called a strike three, but there were probably at least three calls, if not more, that went Yamaoka's way.
And it wasn't even consistent. That was the problem, right? Because
yeah.
Nishi was getting, you know, really hosed on a number of those calls, and Yamaoka was getting everything.
Well, and I had made a note very soon after, and this could have turned the tides of the game, or at least kept it a tie. Iwazaki threw one pretty much in the same spot that Yamaoka did. And Yamaoka got the strike on it. Iwazaki got a ball on it. And if that had been a strike, it would have been a strikeout. It would have ended the inning. And it would have been 2-2 heading into the bottom of the eighth, which could have changed things. Anyways, let's not complain too much about the umps. I know that the players don't, or they might grumble in their hearts, but they also know, like, nothing you can do about it. Just move on and try to make the best of it. And that's the thing. Like, because the umps were calling so inconsistently and so poorly against them, it was like Yamaoka was taking advantage of that, and he had his control. So he knew, well, I don't have to even hit the corners. I can just come close to the corners. I'm going to get my calls. So nothing was over the middle of the plate last night. Nothing. And so as a result, we were lucky to kind of lucky, I guess, to get those two runs. Though they came off, I don't think I even mentioned, Yuki Nishi with an RBI single. So we've got several run production coming out of our pitchers, right? Alcantara had one earlier against the Marines as well. I'm still pro DH, by the way. But there you go. So that was one. And then Chikamoto had himself a good night. I think he had a couple of hits. One of them was an RBI. He also had the leadoff double in the bottom of the first. That ended up fruitless because Yano is back to doing the bunty thing. So can we do it? Cue the music. Yano.
Was that on purpose? Pull the whole outfield? Yano? Who's that? I've never heard of him before. Who is that? Yano?
Yeah. The bunt in the eighth inning against the Lions, I didn't like. I also didn't like the bunt here as well. In the bottom of the first, our leadoff guy gets a double. Okay, so I know Yamaoka is a good pitcher, and he showed it the rest of the way. But we got the leadoff double. We've got a guy in second. He's very fast. There are no outs. Nakano's very fast as well. There's no chance of a double play here. Nakano's been hitting the ball fairly well. He doesn't bunt very well. Do you see where I'm getting at here? Is there anything that logically would tell you to bunt the guy in this situation? No! Except that Yano knows baseball better than I do, and he also gave the umps an earful on Saturday at MetLife Dome after the final out, which was also questionable. Again, the umps, I'm not really sure what they're doing or what they're seeing. So, I don't know. I don't want to get that earful from Yano, so I'm not going to complain too hard, but please, can you just let our guys hit? Show that you believe in them, Yano, please.
Yeah, especially, you know what? This wasn't the first time that Nakano failed to lay down a sack bunt.
Right.
And the first time that he failed, when the announcer said, Nakano has never executed a sack bunt, sacrifice bunt before, and I'm like, okay, why do we start now? And the same thing happened again last night, as you say. And it's like, of all the possible times and chances for things like this, don't pick on, you know, don't make Nakano do this. Don't.
So the only, I guess, like, justification would be, like, I know that Yano likes to kind of train these guys up, and he'll say, obenkyo, right? Like, it's a chance for him to study or a chance for him to learn. And, okay, it was the first inning, so it wasn't, like, a crucial situation per se, but it certainly was a chance that we could have blown the game open, at least gotten a run or two in the first inning instead of nothing. So, yeah, I was not very excited about that.
Old habits die hard. At least this is the first really questionable decision he's made so far. And we're, what, 2 months into the season? I'll take that as a win.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, for some of our listeners, that might be the first time they hear the Yano jingle. But we've had this around for 3 seasons now. So there you go. Good on Yano. We love you. Honestly, I do. I really think he's a great manager. So I'm excited. Okay, before we end the recaps, let's just say that our team record right now is 31 wins, 16 losses, and 2 ties. We are 4-4 in this stretch. We predicted a 7-3-1. Obviously, with the rain out plus the 3 corona outs, we didn't get to 11 games, but we also reached 4 losses, which we did not predict. C'est la vie. Okay, well, it's time for, because it's the start of June, Player of the Month.
What you gonna do when your team needs you? You're gonna stand tall and hit it over the wall. You are the Player of the Month. The man, the myth, the tiger. Your Player of the Month.
Or should I say Players of the Month? Okay, so we are going to pick, as we always do, a pitcher and a hitter each. And so there's a possibility of a max of 6 guys getting their accolades today. But we're going to start with Sanjay giving us his Pitcher of the Month. Who have you got for us? Who impressed you the most in May, Mr. Sanjay?
My man is going to be Suarez with a 0.00 ERA, 12 innings pitched, 9 saves, 0.5 walks and hits per innings pitched. That's pretty awesome.
Pretty sick performance. Yeah, I mean, like, there's, you can't do better than that. And that's just really been, like Gabe has said, it makes our innings or our games seven long instead of eight, or instead of nine. Well, obviously with him, it makes it eight long, but still, just to be able to say, you know, we're not allowing any runs in the ninth inning of close games, so you better try to get them before that. I mean, that's just amazing. So I definitely agree with that call. Who you got for us, Gabe?
Normally, I'm a bullpen guy too, but I really liked what Takumi Akiyama was able to put together in terms of the month of May. Two starts, 15 innings, a whip of only 0.6, and a K per nine of 6.6. So quietly effective, able to keep the team in the game, and although he didn't win both of his starts, he still looked pretty darn good. So hopefully he'll start to get more shots in the rotation, maybe move up a slot or two when we get an off day. He's been doing well this year, and I'd like to see more from him.
Did you know that the last time Akiyama walked a guy was in the fifth inning against the Hiroshima Carp on April the 15th?
I did not know that, but that's another reason to adore what he's been able to do this season.
Yeah, the guy has got his control. And what always amazes me about him, I can't stop talking about this, he doesn't have much velocity on his pitches. And he's a well-built guy. So just looking at him, you would assume that he could probably throw at least 94, 95. He's hitting maybe 86 on his fastball. 86, 87. Constantly. I don't think I've seen him hit 90 ever. But still, he's able to make guys miss, or, you know, their timing's off or whatever. And so just highly impressive. Yeah, really good stuff. You guys, I'm choosing as my pitcher of the month, Suarez and Akiyama. Those are the two that I had, and I get to choose too because I'm the host. So sorry, Sanjay. I told you you couldn't, but I can.
It's all right. Those are the names I had too. So
there you go. Those are the two pitchers of the month for May. Good job, man. All right, let's go to hitters. And Gabe, we're going to let you lead off this one here. Who you got?
I got the leadoff man, Koji Chikamoto. A 417 OBP in May is sign of really strong both plate discipline and getting things going, getting the offense started. 870 OPS, so he's able to slug a little bit as well. 5-for-6 in steals for the month. 18 runs scored, so he's setting the table and other players are able to knock him in. And given our team's defense, I'd like to highlight no errors in the month of May from Chikamoto. So Chikamoto has been able to improve on his slow start, and portends good things, I hope.
Let's give a couple more numbers in there. No errors on the year, first of all. Secondly, two strikeouts in the whole month in 84 plate appearances. So 26 hits, just two strikeouts. He's got 9 walks also during that time, so he was able to look at a lot more bad pitches, which is something that he has kind of struggled with in the past. Particularly, I think he has tended to swing at the first pitch that he thought he could hit and put in play. Now I think he's being a bit more patient. The other number that stands out to me is his RISP, 467 with runners in scoring position, which led to him having 7 RBI, which is not a super high total, but when you consider the guys on base in front of him are going to be the number 8 and number 9 hitters more often than not, maybe the 7th on occasion, that's still a pretty good number. So good call on that one. Sanjay, who you got for us?
Well, since Chikamoto was taken, I'm going to go with the other one that everybody else is probably going to think about too. Teruaki Sato, the man with 6 home runs, a 354 on-base percentage, and a 984 OPS for the month of May. He hit 300, 301 actually. So He's my man.
Yeah, cut down on his strikeouts. He also hit 391 with runners in scoring position, which is absolutely incredible. Yeah, just a great month out of Sato for sure. No errors, and he also filled in quite admirably for Oyama when he was out with injury. So he not only batted fourth, but he also did quite admirably at third base. I was really impressed with his defense there as well. So good call on that. Well, fortunately, I've got some plans C and D here as well. So I'm gonna give props to two guys anyways, because I'm the host, I get that privilege. I'm gonna give one to Jeffrey Marte. Not a super month as far as batting average. I mean, he was right around where he is for the whole year. He was 284 on the month. 3 home runs, 11 RBIs, but a 407 on-base percentage. He is looking at a lot of pitches, whether good or bad. 13 walks, 15 strikeouts, and 350 with runners in scoring position. So pretty good clutch month for him. And then, as I talked about earlier in the show during the recaps, Mr. Jerry Sands. I mean, this is a guy that has been quite consistent. 324 batting average for the month, 5 home runs, 9 RBI. We're also looking at actually, so a 968 OPS. And uncharacteristic of him, with runners in scoring position, just a 208. So hopefully that will be on the upswing in the month of June. But overall, Mr. Sands had himself a pretty solid month. So I'm giving it to Martin Sands. So we got, really, I mean, that's like our number 1, 3, 5, and 6 hitters right there that are getting the calls. And so we're looking at, hopefully, our number 4 hitter, Yusuke Oyama, to pick up his game. I really think that he is crucial to us surviving the rest of Interleague. And speaking of which, let's get into the hot topic.
Hanshin Tigers English News. Hanshin Tigers English News. Hanshin Tigers English News. Hanshin Tigers English News. Hot topics. Hot topics.
So, we are talking Pacific League teams, just to give everybody a little bit of a heads up on who we are about to face and what they look like, both roster-wise, standings-wise, and everything else in between. So, last time we already talked about the Buffaloes. And the Buffaloes are hitting extremely well during this interleague set. It's really been fun to see what they are doing. By the way, right now in interleague, we are 3 wins and 4 losses, which puts us in a logjam. Really, the whole standings is logjammed, but we are in 7th place right now, tied with the Nippon Ham Fighters. And first up, we have got Sanjay is going to tell us about the SoftBank Hawks. So if you want to step up to the mic, go ahead, man.
Alrighty, here we go. The SoftBank Hawks, currently ranked number 1 in the Pacific League, although only just a half game ahead of the Rakuten Eagles. Their record is 26-21-8. The breakdown within the Pacific League is that they're 4-1 against Rakuten, which is pretty impressive. 4-3 against Lotte, 4-6 against Cebu, 6-5 against Oryx, and 6-2 against Nippon Ham. They are only 2-4 in interleague play, but they beat up on the Giants twice, so that's always a good thing. They scored 239 runs for the year, which is second in the league. Their runs against is 196, which is the best in the league. They have 51 home runs, which is third in the league. 38 stolen bases, also third. But the batting average is the tops in the Pacific League at 263. And their ERA is also best in the league at 336, which kind of explains why they are the number one team for now. In fact, they're 4 of the top 5 hitters in the batting lineup are hitting above 300. So who are those guys? Well, some of the names that you need to know. The 3-hole hitter is Kurihara Ryoya. And
he was the Japan Series MVP last year.
There we go.
Yep.
So he broke out last year with 17 home runs. This year he's got 6 home runs already. And a 312 batting average, an OPS of 854, and a runners in scoring position average of 340. So that's your number 3-hole guy, followed by Mr. All Everything for the SoftBank Hawks, and even for all of Samurai Japan, Yanagita Yuki. He, of 5 Golden Glove Awards and 5 Best 9 prizes over his history. Last year, he hit 342 and 29 home runs and was the MVP of the year. This year, he's hitting 300. He has 12 home runs and 64 hits, which is tops on his team, and an OPS right now of 928. So that's a guy that we have to keep an eye on. Interesting name that you probably all are familiar with. Coco Ballantyne is on that team. He only hit 9 home runs last year, and actually he only has 2 home runs so far this year on May 28 versus the Giants. But he's just one shy of becoming or hitting 300 home runs in Japan, which would make him the 4th foreigner to do so. So, you know, he's the guy who hit number 60 off of Randy Messenger back in 2013. and he's here at another milestone home run. So this may happen while we're playing them. I don't know. I hope not.
Yeah.
They also have a new pitcher that they just picked up, Colin Rea, R-E-A, it's spelled. And it looks like he's going to be pitching on June 3rd against DeNA. So we'll see what this guy's all about.
But we won't.
With the Padres.
Yeah, we won't face him.
Yeah, yeah. We won't face him, but just, yeah. And their big-name pitcher, Senga, is actually, he hurt himself in camp, and then hurt himself again on his April 6th start with a left ankle ligament damage. So he's in the farm playing catch, which means that slated for the mound for them when we face them, I think, is Friday, Ishikawa. He, last year, had the most wins and the highest winning percentage at an 11-3 record. This year, he's had 10 starts so far. He's 3-3 with a 2.74 ERA. 90% of the starts are quality starts. Opponents are batting only 224 against him, and he has a whip of 1.10.
Yeah, but guess who hit a home run against him in his very first at-bat of the preseason? Sato!
Our man.
That's right. Yeah, back in March. Yeah, so he faces then. He was their opening day pitcher this year as well. Yeah, we'll see how that goes. Okay, who's up next?
Yeah. The Saturday pitcher for them, I think, is going to be Martinez. He was a Fordham grad, played for the Rangers in the U.S., spent last year at Nippon Ham and only got 2 wins and 17 starts. But this year so far, he's had 5 starts and is 4-1 with a 1.97 ERA and a 0.88 whip over 32 innings. So he's having quite the breakout year this year, and you know, I'm not really looking forward to facing him. And their Sunday starter is likely to be Tsuyoshi Wada, the 15-year veteran who last year went 8-1 with a 2.94 ERA. This year, it's not so good so far. He's 3-3 with a 4.62 ERA and 9 starts. 50 innings pitched, though, and 46 Ks, so he can still bring it, even though he's old.
Crafty veterans seem to get our number, so I'm not really looking forward to that one either. So it could be a pretty rough weekend at Koshien Stadium for sure.
Yep. And just as an aside, speaking of people who were on both teams, as you know, we have on our team from the SoftBank Hawks, Kajiya and Suarez, of course. And Nakata Kenichi, who is actually not, hasn't had any appearances on the top team so far.
This year, yeah. Last year.
This year, yeah. And just one more Natsukashi name to mention, just because Jason Standridge was with the SoftBank Hawks in 07 and 08, then with Hanshin in 2010 to 2013, and back in the Hawks in 14 to 15. So we do have quite the connection with the SoftBank Hawks. And in fact, if I may go so far back as to say that back when they were the Nankai Hawks, I knew the sons of Don Blasingame, the manager, who was later the Hanshin Tigers manager as well. So lots of relationships between the SoftBank Hawks and the Hanshin Tigers.
Well, and I think, too, the fact that they used to be in Osaka, right? They were the Nankai Hawks in Osaka. We faced them in the Nippon Series in 1964, and they beat us 4-3. We faced them in the 2003 Nippon Series when they were the Daiei Hawks, and they beat us 4-3. And then we faced them again in the 2014 Nippon Series when they were the SoftBank Hawks, and they beat us 4-1. That series is much closer than the final indicates. But yeah, they are 3-0 against us in Nippon Series action. So, one more note on that series, though. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I read that Tsuyoshi Nishioka, who used to play for us back last decade, he is going to be making his broadcasting debut in that series. And so, I don't remember which feed it's going to be, but if you kind of keep your eyes or ears on the lookout, on the hear out for that, you may hear that familiar voice. It's going to be interesting just to hear what kind of input he's got or what kind of insight he's got into the game and how he plans to do that from the broadcasting booth.
Isn't he still with the Tochigi Golden Braves in the BCL with Munenori Kawasaki?
He is.
And I wonder how he's going to be able to split his duties there.
Well, I mean, I think it's just the one night. I'm not really sure if maybe Tochigi's on a bit of a break or not, or I don't know if like Mune has connected him because he's with, you know, he used to be with the Hawks, but we'll see. Yeah. Okay, so that one is the end of our home stretch of Interleague. We go on the road for the final week, and I'm going to start things off talking about the Nippon Ham Fighters, who play up in Sapporo at the Sapporo Dome, at least for this year and next year, and then they move into a new ballpark in 2023. Well, they are in last place in the PL right now with an 18-28-5 record. And their main players that I guess we should maybe look out for would be Haruki Nishikawa, a speedster who was trying to make his way to the majors but didn't get offers this past offseason. And then they've got Kensuke Kondo, who is an on-base machine. People say he is a threat to hit 400 at some point in his career. I know he was close 1 year, but he ended up having his season cut short by injury. I think he was batting 423 when that happened, and that was like in June or something like that. And then the other one is a Taiwanese import named, I keep getting his name wrong, but I guess in Japanese or in Chinese, it'd be Wamporong. So it sounds almost like a delicious food. And I don't know, I might get in trouble for saying that, but he's actually having, hey, respect to him. I mean, that's just my ignorance. That's not anything on him. And yeah, please don't hurt me for saying that. So he's actually having an all right season compared to his first year in NPB. I believe at this point he is batting 274 with 3 home runs and 11 RBIs, which doesn't sound too spectacular, but his OPS is 889, so that's quite good. All right, so those are the main hitters that we need to look out for, because Sho Nakata has been sent down to the farm and is MIA. He's kind of pulling a Wayne Chen, I guess. Like, people don't really know where he is. He's not actually with the farm team, but he's also not with the top squad. So they're thinking it might be mental issues, and there's also been talk of him being on the trading block. There was talk of maybe the Chunichi Dragons trying to trade for him, but then the question there is, like, where do they put him? Because there's no DH, and they've got Viciado at first base. So I don't know if that would ever even materialize. But Nakata, who has definitely a long history of being a star player in NPB, is not going to be a factor, probably, in this series, because he hasn't played anywhere in the past couple of weeks. So I can't imagine them just pulling him up to the top squad after that amount of inactivity and having him face our outstanding front half of the rotation. So if things go the way they do this week, we will have Yuki Nishi on the mound, and he'll face up against Naoyuki Uwasawa, who is actually a pretty good pitcher for them. And then we will have Takumi Akiyama up against something Kato. Sorry, I didn't have time or energy to look up the first name. Younger guy. And then we would have Thursday, I'm not really sure, because I think Alcantara is supposed to start this Thursday, but then with the talk of Gunkel coming up to the top squad, we don't know if Alcantara is still going to be here or not. But anyways, well, there was talk of somebody else, I forget who. Anyways, they've got some guy named Ikeda, so I really don't think they've got the strength of their rotation coming in against us in this series, the first game aside. As far as players that we used to have that they now have, we traded away Masaki Tanigawa to them. Just for a little bit of pocket change. So he's up with the Ham Fighters now. He's pitched in 7 games, 7 2/3 innings with 5 runs against, or 5 earned runs against for a 5.87 ERA. Not spectacular. I don't know if he's even on the top squad now or if he's been sent down to the farm. And the other name of note, I guess, is that Yoshio Itoi used to be a fighter. He was drafted by them as a pitcher in 2003, spent the first, if I'm not mistaken, it was like 6 or 7 years with them, not all of them on the top squad, and then he got traded to the Buffaloes, and then he came to us via free agency. So, what's the prognosis for this series? Well, first of all, the Fighters actually do have a winning record against us all time, 31-27-1 in interleague history. They also defeated us in the 1962 Nippon Series, 4 wins, 2 losses, and 1 tie. So they do have that success record against us. But I think with them being in 6th place this year, and I don't care if they're tied with us in interleague so far, we're playing at Sapporo Dome. It's going to be low-scoring games, perhaps, but our hitters are better than theirs, and our pitchers that we are slated to bring in are better than theirs. So I don't think they're going to get a lot of runs against our pitchers. I think we are going to sweep them. Any thoughts on that, guys? What are your predictions for this series?
Break out the brooms.
Something, something, punching pork. I don't know.
There you go. Ham Fighters. Okay, so Gabe, wrap it up with the Eagles, if you don't mind.
Certainly. My PL team, the Tohoku Dakuten Golden Eagles, they are currently sitting at second in an extremely close Pacific League race 25, 21, and 9 after play finished yesterday. Only a plus 11 run differential, so this is not a very offensively minded squad, but they're second best in terms of runs against in the Pacific League. They will beat you with their pitching. If you take a look at the batters to watch for, their big four right now are Hideto Asamura, their second baseman, Eigo Tomogi, their captain and third baseman, and two holdovers from the Japan Series win, left fielder Hiroaki Shimauchi and right fielder slash catcher Takeru Okajima. That said, those are the only four guys who are at or above an 800 OPS. There's a lot of noodle bats in that lineup, so it means that our better pitchers can probably mow them down, and if Yano's crafty, he'll probably be able to align up our better bullpen arms against those four guys. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see Iwasada or Akiya or Suarez up against the meat of the order, and maybe giving someone like Baba or Kobayashi the ninth inning if it's up against the rest of the noodle bats. Former Tigers on the Eagles? There aren't any, actually. But if you want some kind of connection, the Tigers' current battery coach, Akihito Fuji, is a former Eagle. So that's as close of a dotted line as you can make. The pitchers we're going to be facing on this weekend series at Rakuten Seimei Park Miyagi are their opening day starter, Hideaki Wakui, with a record of 5-3, 3.75 ERA and 1.24 whip, but he had a rough May. His ERA last month was 8.27 with a 1-3 record. So we should be able to hang a couple of crooked numbers on against him. On Saturday, Makun is back. It's Masahiro Tanaka. 2-3 record so far, 2.54 ERA, 0.91 whip. I'd be curious to see what his run support numbers look like, because those peripherals to me say he's being let down by his offense. I think he pitched to a tie in his most recent start. And on Sunday, it's their rookie wunderkind, Takahisa Hayakawa, 6-2, 3.14 ERA, 1.11 whip. They've been sort of pottering around 500 over the last little while, 2-4 in interleague so far. 2-4-1 with a negative run differential. So I'm hoping we catch them as they're still struggling. We're up against too many good pitchers to call for a sweep. I mean, we might be able to scrape out two wins, but Tanaka and Hayakawa are going to pitch us close. I'm calling a 2-1 series win, though, especially since the Eagles have a losing record against us in interleague. They are 29.
I think they're one of two teams that have a losing record against the Hanshin Tigers in interleague. So it is going to be interesting, though. Sometimes, I think in the past, anyways, the Tigers have crumbled against three different types of pitchers. Veterans, big names, and prize rookies. We got vet.
Who's left otherwise? That covers a pretty large. Yeah,
but if you look at this, though, we've got 1, 2, and 3 right there. Wakui, who's been around forever and with three different teams and different success, track record with all three teams, and then Makun's the big name, and then Hayakawa is the prize rookie. So we'll see how it goes. I wouldn't say, again, I'm saying that about teams past. I really think that when you look at the lineups that we trotted out against those big names, veterans, and prize rookies, they weren't very good to begin with, but I think we've got a pretty good lineup this time around. So I could see us going 2-1. I hope so. I think there's going to be a couple of key things again. One is, what does their bullpen look like? Because I'm not really sure, but from what I've seen recently, their closer Yuki Matsui is outstanding, but the rest of their bullpen is a little bit shaky. So I think that gives us a chance, as long as we can get their starters out fairly early. The other one is going to be, how do we do with the DH? And that's going to be the question mark, and that's something I want to talk to you guys about in this prediction section right now as well.
What's going to happen? What's the record going to be? What's going to happen? What's the record going to be? What's going to happen? What's the record going to be? What's going to happen? What's the record going to be?
See the future? Yes, they can. Check it out. H10 predictions. See the future? Yes, they can. Check it out. H10 predictions.
What's going to happen? What's the record going to be?
Their bullpen's been a little shaky, but in May, they actually had a good performance from a lot of their bullpen guys. Anraku, Xiao Hao Sung, Kohei Morihara, all sporting ERAs of 1.5 or less. So it depends on what kind of a month they have, if they can keep that hot streak going. Fingers crossed they don't.
So let's jump into predictions then. We've got 11 more interleague games, and whether they get rained out or not is kind of a moot point, because by the time that we come to you next time, these 11 games should be all finished, or at least there might be like one left, worst case scenario, two left. But anyhow, what is our record going to look like in these last 11 games is the first question I've got for you.
I'll go first.
Okay.
11 games, we are going to be 7-4.
I would take that any day of the week or any time of the year, really. I personally think right now, so far, we are 3-4. I think we're going to end up right at the 500 mark. So I'm going to go with a 6-5 the rest of the way.
I'm in accordance with T-Ray. 6-5 is my estimation, especially since SoftBank still scares me. Like, they're the class of the PL for a reason.
Yep, for sure. All right, question number two in predictions is, who is going to be our DH in Sapporo and Sendai next week? You don't have to choose just one guy, but who do you think is going to get the bulk of the action, or which two guys or three guys do you think are going to get some time here?
I think that we're going to see Jerry Sands in the DH spot, and maybe Itoi, depending on the matchup and so on.
Okay.
I'm going to go with Itoi. Like, he batted extremely well in the limited action he's seen in May. Ride the hot hand. I mean, his fielding isn't where it was in years past. Doesn't need to be with a DH. So keep your best defensive lineup out there, or your best blended lineup out there, and put Itoi in at the DH spot. I mean, Sands, if you move him from left to DH, my question is, does Rojas go into left, or are you going to get better defense with another batter out there?
So, and that brings us to our third question. So before that, I'll just kind of chime in. Yeah, I really think I would go with Gabe, what Gabe said as well. But I also kind of wonder if there wouldn't be like a wild card in there, like maybe a Naomasa Yokawa getting a game or two, especially if we get some left-handed starters. And we will, at least in Hayakawa. I don't know if the Fighters are bringing any lefties against us, because I don't know their pitchers that well. Good research, T-Ray. So my question then is this. What are we doing with Rojas? What do you think is going to happen, not only in these 2 weeks, but moving forward in the season? As you know, he is, what, 2-34, 2-35 on the season so far. He went over his first 20, and then after that, he got a few hits, and then he went back into an over. So what do you think? Is he going to get sent down when Gunkel gets called up, or do you think that he's going to remain on the top? And what do we do moving forward with him?
I would think that he's going to be sent down when Gunkel's brought up, and they'll let him get some hacks in the farm team and get into a better place before they bring him back up again when we need him.
At this point, like, it's sunk costs. We're going to be paying Rojas his contract money no matter what. So the question has to be, what will give the Hanshin Tigers the best chance of winning the CL pennant? And if that means someone else is in left or DH or right field instead of Mel Rojas Jr., so be it. Like, even though we're only 2 months into the season, these games still count towards the end. So the more opportunities you get to put better bats, better fielders out there, and let Rojas figure out the Japanese game as opposed to the KBO game, all the better. I agree with Sanjay. Sending him down seems like the right call. I also will not be in that much of a rush to bring him back up. Like, start when your OPS begins with a 1 point something.
So a couple of things about that. I actually agree with both of you on this. You know, I think that they did a better job with him than they've done in the past, where like a guy like Solarte came in mid-season and got one farm game or maybe two. Like, Rojas actually got like 4 or 5, which is a little bit better. But I think really, like, He was the prize signing of the offseason, and Hanshin really wanted to make a statement with him, like, haha, we got him and the Giants didn't. And that in itself is a victory. I mean, we don't know if he would have thrived in orange. I kind of don't think so. Like, orange isn't anyone's color, but we don't know that. But the fact that we got him and nobody else did means that that's something that they just didn't have a chance to see. What if with Rojas? Now, if Rojas does not ever pan out, I still don't see that as a huge loss for the Tigers, because we do have a good lineup. If he does pan out, I mean, this is, we could look at him as what we looked at Marte as for the past couple seasons, which is kind of just the insurance guy. Like, if somebody goes down with injury, right? The plan for last year was, actually, Sands, I think, was the insurance guy of sorts, right? Because we had Bohr as the guy that was supposed to do all the heavy lifting. Sands ended up doing it. And we had Marte, who ended up getting hurt and missing most of the season. Well, this year, we've got a healthy Marte. We've got a healthy Sands. And Rojas can be like that third guy that if something happens, or if there's fatigue coming in, or long slumps, or injuries, which still could happen, if he's down on the farm, performing really well, feeling really good. I mean, guys, I don't know if you noticed this or if anyone told you or whatever, but he has deleted his Instagram account, and I'm not sure what it is, but I would guess maybe it's because Hanshin fans are jerks, especially to guys that aren't doing very well. That's a strong possibility. So, I don't know. I mean, get the guy back to feeling good, happy to be with the Tigers, performing well, enjoying himself, hitting the ball, and then when the need comes up, bring him up. So that's what I would like to see happen. Of course, you know, I always want every foreigner to succeed. So I'm not going to say like, oh, you know, he's a bust or forget him. I definitely want to see good stuff out of him in 2021 and beyond. All right, I think that's going to do it for today. So thank you so much for tuning in to H10. If you haven't gotten your fill of the Tigers or us, we are going to be doing the post show right after this. You can also check us out on Patreon for some exciting benefits, including game viewing parties that we're doing once a month. It'll be fun to have you in those. Check out our website. We've been putting up scorecards every day for these games. Check us out on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook. All those details are in the show notes. Thank you to Amor for the theme music. I know he's not listening anyway. Thank you to Show for mixing this show. And Sanjay, thanks for joining us, man.
Thanks for having me, as always.
Gabe as well, thank you for coming.
Always a pleasure, D-Ray.
All right, we'll catch you all next time.